So welcome to month three Investable ETR briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of March to the 31st of March 2023. Once again, we'll be continuing with this new style of briefing as of recent months. I hope you all found it interesting as we look closer at what is happening within Credit Exchange. Firstly, today we'll begin by looking at one of our shipping originators and how we're involved with the buying and selling of vessels. Next, we will show you some of the work that goes on at our deal desk and some of the potential projects the team. There will also be our monthly segments on the Seaborne report and the state of the European and global economies. And to finish off, we will look at the briefing itself and some of the key information from it. So now for our first topic, I'll hand you back to Andrew.
Thanks, Dot Ruby. So for today's first topic, I will be speaking about probably our most active ATR or asset finance originator, who is a Hong Kong-based family-run company operating for over 30 years, offering sustainable disposable solutions and also servicing the offshore market. What I mean by active is that they actually have quite a number of deals with us involving the buying, selling and leasing of shipping vessels. And they are also the client who I mentioned that made the introduction for us to that new originator we discussed last month with the oil servicing vessel. They charter out our and their vessels to significant companies across the world. And we've already seen that one of our vessels was previously in operation off the coast of Africa, while another one of our vessels is chartered to a company down in Brazil. The originator began with the exchange in 2021 and has since gone on to trade over 37 million euro with the exchange. This 37 million is a mix of nearly 22 million euro in asset finance, which in this case specifically was for the purchase and lease back or refinancing of several vessels. And also a combination of supplier and debtor finance then makes up the remaining 15 million euro. With one such debtor being our originator, as mentioned from last month. So in total, we actually have purchased 10 vessels with this originator since they began trading. Now, this fleet was not purchased in one transaction. The fleet was grown when our originator presented the trade desk with an opportunity where the vessel was chosen by the originator and where they have identified good employment opportunities for that vessel. The first transaction for them was actually a refinance and a lease back of their existing fleet of 6 vessels, where we took ownership of these vessels. The vessels then were purchased and put into our process of where the long-term charter income that is received for the work that these ships carry out must flow into the credit bank account. And so from there, the start of our fleet of vessels was established. The vessels then were renamed by our originator shortly after purchase, and all of their vessels since have followed the same naming pattern where they've named them actually after a member of the Avengers or some other superhero group, such as Stark, Hulk, or Thor. So since then, we've actually added to this fleet 4 more times, purchasing further vessels, with our most recent one being in September 2022. Like most things, though, in the world, the price of vessels has dramatically increased over the last 2 years. And one of the first vessels that we've refinanced for this originator was actually around $350,000 in 2021, while the single largest value for one vessel purchase for this group was $3.3 million in September 2022. Which, as also mentioned, is also currently the most recent purchase of a vessel for this originator. Interestingly, from the first trade, we've actually sold 4 of these vessels. The originator negotiated the sale price for these, which was $5.67 million, while the purchase price for these vessels was only just shy of 1.1 million euro. So this means then that they were sold at 5 times the purchase price. So we may have funded the purchase of 10 vessels for this originator.
What'd you say?
Everybody just goes on mute there. So we may have funded the purchase of 10 vessels for this originator, but we currently only have 4 on our books. This is because we have sold off 6 of them and actually have a pending request to purchase our 11th vessel for this same originator. As I mentioned, vessel prices are ever increasing at this time. So if a good opportunity comes along where the exchange can make a profit, we will capitalize on it and sell the vessel. This year, we've sold 2 additional vessels from this fleet. Wayne, called after Bruce Wayne from Batman, and Stark of Tony Stark from Iron Man. If we take Stark, for example, it was purchased in October 2021 for $2.4 million, with credit financing 1.6 million euro of this purchase. This was then sold this year for $6.2 million, which came to 4.1 million after brokers' commission and a buyout of the remaining charter party. This left a profit of $1.4 million. So then when one of our vessels is sold, we will come to an agreement on a profit share for both parties. This is then in addition to the lease settlement. So for this particular transaction, after only 16 months, Credet ended up receiving the full set of lease payments for the two-year term, along with 12.5% share of the profit, which worked out at $175,000. In total then, Credet received $2 million for the sale of this vessel, made up of the early settlement of the lease in full, repayment of any legal fees during the selling process, and then our profit share. This is just one example of how we're not only receiving income from the leasing and use of our vessels, but by partnering with these experienced shipping companies, if an advantageous situation comes about, we will be able to share on a portion of the profit. This is another reason why our recent move to getting involved with shipping finance has been very beneficial for the company and your investors. All this increased demand for financing required more funding, and what was the driving force behind us increasing the investable rates late in 2021 and into 2022. So that's a further look into operations involved in the buying and selling of vessels, and hopefully with each briefing we can give you further insight into more what goes on in Credet daily and how we're going to use your clients' funds. Keeping with this, last month we brought you a new section where we looked at some of the potential deals that could happen in the future. These are what Patrick and his team, the Deal Desk, are working on. And I'm glad to say we'll be continuing with this section and once again hand you over to Patrick to talk to you further about this month's topic.
Thanks, Andrew. And hi, everyone. As Andrew said, it's my remit to explain some of the potential deals the Deal Desk are currently working on. Once again, we've quite a few interesting potential projects at the moment. One, for example, like in last month's briefing, we looked at a specific sugar market trade in Brazil. And this month we have a similar one that we're looking at in Switzerland. We have not yet proceeded with the Brazilian transaction because we're waiting on specific types and formats of documents and whatnot. If we don't get the correct type and format, that Brazilian transaction will go nowhere. And the same would apply to the Swiss transaction. This originator is looking for a similar type of trade finance for their business, except they will be moving sugar from Africa and selling to customers in Europe. While we're all while looking at that, we're also talking with a Romanian company that is looking for asset finance for the purchase of a bulk carrier. One deal that is quite interesting is a potential customer that has come to us from the UAE, where they're looking for trade finance to purchase railway track that it will source from a foundry in Saudi Arabia, and then they will sell it to customers in the Far East, in countries such as China, Japan, and Korea. So this trade is specifically looking at two types of railway track called OR50 and OR65. That doesn't mean a whole lot to me or indeed most of the people on this call, but they're very specific railway sizes that are certified and quantified and checked before they're installed on a railway track for obvious reasons. But this potential deal seems to be coming around at the right time, particularly in the case of China, where the country's maintenance of its current infrastructure has fallen into serious arrears as a result of being in lockdown for almost 3 years. And Andrew tells me there's been quite a significant number of large-scale infrastructure railway projects being announced in China recently. Sticking with China in general, it remains by far the largest importer of iron in the world. In the period of January to December 2022, China accounted for 71.3% of global iron imports, with Japan in second place at only 6%, and the entire EU in third place at 5.5%. So China's imports of iron grew 14.8% in March of this year compared to the same month last year, again, attributable to the lockdown. And with its now reopening, they're pressing ahead with their five-year plan for national economic and social development, which encompasses the years 21 to 2035, I think. Yes, I am correct, because it says it's called Vision 2035. So it is 2021 to 2035, which is a total of 102 railway projects planned in it. So this year alone, China plans to open 3,000 kilometers of new railway lines. And all this potential work provides our originator with significant possibilities and revenue streams as our customer, what we call an originator, looks for those supplies, which, as I said, are coming out of Saudi Arabia. So the long-awaited reopening of China is a possible golden ticket for those who are looking to feed into that market, be it in projects like this and others. So this potential deal is once again one that we will be looking at financing using documentary credits. As discussed at last month's briefing, these letters of credit are a secure form of finance. They're a financial instrument issued by a bank. And we're looking to use more of these in trades similar to this, and indeed the sugar or grain trades I would have spoken about in the past. As this particular customer originator's customers are in China, it's more than likely that the buyer's bank would be one of the Chinese state banks. So in this instance, we may require that this Chinese LC is what's called silently confirmed by another bank based in the EU. Chinese are not very keen on anyone even suggesting that their LCs need to be confirmed by anybody, because they deem themselves to be a global power. But oftentimes, depending on which particular Chinese bank is issuing it, it's prudent to look for silent confirmation within the EU or US. So that's a look at some of the types of things that we're looking at the deal desk and what we're exploring at the moment, and a little bit more information on the use of LCs. And before handing you back to Andrew for the rest of the briefing, it's probably worth saying that KPMG are at an advanced stage in our annual audit. For those that are unaware, for the past 8 years, we've been audited by Deloitte, and we took the decision last year to change auditors. KPMG would appear to have much better knowledge in the area of trade, and specifically the division in Ireland has a better knowledge of shipping. So they were appointed back in August of last year. And apart from some preliminary work that they would have done in November and December of last year, because Credit is a new client to them, the KPMG partner wanted to begin the audit after St. Patrick's weekend. So far, everything seems to be going in the right direction, and we should be able to present the final draft figures next month, if not the actual signed accounts themselves. So I look forward to doing that at the next briefing. Back to you, Andrew.
Thanks, Patrick. And again, it's great to get a better insight into the types of deals that Credit are looking to finance and some of the initial groundwork that is actually done by you and your team on the deal desk. So as I have mentioned before, Patrick and his team tend to look at what is relevant at the world kind of when reviewing potential deals. As mentioned above, the Chinese reopening is really starting to take center stage and influence all aspects of business. If we look to this month's set of seaborne reports, they are once again predicting Europe to face difficult and expensive winter next year without enough long-term liquid natural gas deals. There are two reasons for this. Firstly, OPEC Europe has not made enough progress in locking long-term contracts for LNG as an alternative to Russian pipeline supply. And second, the dramatic increase in the Chinese demand for LNG will make the market more competitive and is going to drive up future prices. This increased demand could not be coming in a worse time, as in a separate report, Seaborne discussed how last week OPEC actually announced to cut oil output even further. So a reduction of 1.16 million barrels per day. And according to Reuters, this is now 3.66 million barrels per day OPEC have cut in 2023, which is actually equivalent to 3.7% of the global demand. With supply decreasing and demand increasing, it's easy to see why trades and funds are quite bullish on the price of oil. Earlier this month, the biggest oil traders and energy hedge funds across the globe were speaking at the FT Commodities Global Summit. There was a very bullish tone being struck throughout the conference, with none more so than Pierre Andurand, founder of the hedge fund Andurand Capital, who has predicted that Brent oil is to hit a price of $140 a barrel by the end of this year. This would be the highest price in at least 15 years since July 2008, when the banking collapse was about to take place. These dramatic price increases are now starting to be predicted across the market. So as we finally seem to move past the cold days, it looks like we may already have to start preparing for the next set. Reasons like this are why investing and improving renewable energy sources is so important. And it comes as no surprise that China seems to once again be leading the pack. In a recent state visit of French President Emmanuel Macron to China, France and China have signed several cooperation deals in the field of energy, notably nuclear and wind energy, with the French state utility EDF and the Chinese utility CGN, both major operators of nuclear plants, signing a deal to renew their long-standing partnership. To finish off this section then, Seaborne's reports once again hold steady their figures from previous about the changes to the global fleet, with both the Handymax and Panamax set to lose 15% of their fleet in the next 5 years, and their future order book is just not sufficient to replace this loss. If we look to the Baltic Index then, the recent positive run has begun to level off, with the index remaining steady over the previous month. It continued its positive run to hit 1600 before falling back towards 1388. This consistency seen in the index is mirrored by the current spot prices for our vessel, with a slight increase on the numbers I presented to you last month, with the current spot price sitting at $13,900 per day, with the FFA markets once again showing even higher prices of $15,000 for Q2 and $16,350 for Q3. Maybe this is because the shipping markets expect the price of oil to rise and in turn the cost to run the ship, or maybe it's due to demand. In an article from the Global Times, it is reported how Chinese ports are seeing fewer empty containers. This would lead one to believe that the demand is growing for these ships. Either way, these higher prices mean our ship owners can charge more per day for the use of the ship, meaning more shipping ETR income that is coming into the credit bank account. It really does seem that China is trying to make up for the lost time over the last 3 years. Every story I've talked about or article referenced so far involves them in some way. And the example of the Chinese ports being busier than ever is a sign that the world is looking to them as a possible escape from these uncertain times. With less empty containers, it is a sign of export recovery as Chinese products gain a resilient and strong foothold in the world market, despite lingering global inflation. With experts predicting China's exports will grow to a further, in 2023 as the country opens wider to the world. While the recovery in the East seems to be going at full speed, the Western economies seem to be going at a more delicate pace. If we look again to inflation and interest rates, which currently are seen as some of the most important indicators of an economy's health, Ireland looks to have gotten back on track after a shock in February. Inflation fell to 7.7% in March of this year. This was down from 8.5% in February and 7.8% in January. This is now the lowest inflation has been since April 2022, but has actually stayed at 5% or more for over 18 months in a row. Interestingly, this shock seems to have set Ireland back. Only a couple of months ago, I spoke about how Ireland was being praised as one of the front runners in leading the EU out of these inflationary times. But with the recent annualised inflation figures being released, putting Ireland actually closer to the bottom of the group. Falling by just over 1%, the annual Irish inflation declined from 8.1% to 7%, but just remains 0.1% higher than the annual EU average of 6.9%. While it is great to see the fall across Europe, it would be better if Ireland could once again pick up the pace. Christine Lagarde, the president of the ECB, has described the situation best. We are seeing some slight improvement in certain areas, but frankly, it's not a lot. The slowing in inflation is primarily due to the fall in energy prices from the peaks of last year. While these falling prices exert downward pressure on inflation, core readings have actually increased for March. These readings exclude unprocessed food and fuel, and they accelerated to 7.5% from 7.4%. These persistently high core readings are exactly why ECB policymakers have already said that interest rates will need to keep rising despite an already record-breaking 3.5 percentage points worth of hikes since last July. The debate now appears to be between a quarter or a half percentage point increase at the May 4th meeting, with April's inflation data only due 2 days before the decision. And it looks like this could be the deciding factor. Though markets are leaning towards a smaller move, but investors still see a 1 in 3 chance that the ECB goes for a bigger increase. My prediction of 4% by the end of the year now seems to possibly be conservative. While in the UK, it is also predicted the Bank of England will increase their rates once again, as it was announced on Wednesday that the UK became the only country in Western Europe to remain in double-digit inflation, as they posted a figure of 10.1% for the month of March. This is a fall from 10.4%, but it was hoped that it would reach 9.8%, according to Reuters. When announcing them, Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt said these figures reaffirm exactly why we must continue with our efforts to drive down inflation, so we can ease the pressure on families and businesses. Even though inflation is topical on this side of the Atlantic, possible banking crisis is still the bigger concern in America. After the recent collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, it was feared many others will start to follow. I described it as a possible crisis, as it seems the market hasn't fully decided if they deem the collapse of one bank a crisis. And depending on whose results you read, it's actually a positive time. Morgan Stanley's chief executive, James Gorman, told analysts we are not in a banking crisis, but he did admit we have had and might still have a crisis in some banks. He then went on to praise the actions of regulators, arguing that the strong regulation on both sides of the Atlantic has led to the cauterization of this issue. Gorman was speaking at the company's Q1 earnings announcement, where a fall in profit was announced, just as Goldman Sachs also did recently. While earnings season has been positive for some banks, with Citibank, Wells Fargo, Bank of America and JP Morgan all beating expectations on the back of the higher interest income. Smaller banks, though, are suffering following the concerns over regional banks in the aftermath of SVB's collapse. It is probably still too early to tell if we will see a repeat of 2008, but it certainly seems that there is a divide between the larger and smaller banks this time around. While credit does provide finance, we are not a bank, and this continues to put us in a strong position by creating situations where others cannot act and allowing us to have a larger client pool. As mentioned before, if a satisfactory deal looks to present itself, credit will be sure to act. Our last section then this evening is to discuss the briefing itself. You will see the figure showing the active RSA of 99.80 million euro, with 74.91 million euro fully allocated in the first section. The credit index then decreased slightly to the market average of 75. Our lists of the top 10 largest holdings and top 10 rated once again contain regular appearances from the likes of the HSE, Balfour Beatty and Skanska Kontane, while our donut graphs are showing a well-diversified spread of investments. If we look to the performance sector, we can see the 2023 month 03 versus 2022 M03 was up 20.75%. at 20.15 million euro traded for March of this year, compared to only 16.69 million in March 2022. Volumes continue to remain down by 11.47% as the value to volume ratio increases in line with the higher value and quality traded ETR. I'm very happy to say investors' redemptions reduced significantly from the unusual high last month. They were 1.3 million euro for March. Then a mining trade involved in the HS2 project in the UK was the single largest trade at 3.29 million sterling. Our trend section then charts the interest rates for the month outside of the current demand fixed and term rates. And as before, the briefing document ends with a repeat of the RSA figure of 99.80 million euro. And then that concludes this month's briefing for March 2023. Thank you very much.